Right, so welcome to our Gardener's Question Forum. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Nick Hamilton, so I own and run Barnsdale, and I have two of my most valuable employees with me today, John Brocklebank, so John's the head gardener, and Susie Watson, who is my productive area genius. So I'll just leave John to sort of introduce himself. And
well, I've been here now for, I think it's my 32nd year. I came here as a trainee back in March 1995, and I've been here ever since. So I've seen my gardens grow. I think I know every plant in my gardens. So, yeah, any questions on anything that you have? And I'll try to help.
I'm Susie Watson. I'm the allotment supervisor here. I've been here, this is my 20th summer that we're going into now. So I've grown most things at Barnsdale. Obviously been a challenging year this year, but any vegetable questions, I'm happy to take those.
If anybody wants to know how I managed to keep staff for so long, I have a shed with a padlock on the outside that I lock them in at night and then I let them out in the morning. It's the best way. Right, so do we have a question?
Hi, I'm very fortunate to have had a Verbascum thapsus, which is the wild mullion, is it called, appear in my herb garden. And once I discovered what it was, I left it where it was because it qualified to stay. But I'm not sure how to care for it. It's flowered for the second time this year, but should I cut it back in spring or autumn? Do I take the flower spikes off? What should I do with it?
Well, I think that one's, is that more of a biennial type? Because the only true perennial one that I know that we have here is Verbascum nigrum. So that comes up year after year. But the type that you have is a biennial. So they tend to seed around and you get new ones coming up. So you've either got to save the seed and scatter it. I'd certainly chop the spike off if you don't like the look of it. But yeah, it won't live for more than a couple of years. So ideally you would raise some fresh ones from seed or just shake the flower spike around and those seeds are likely some of them will come up in following years.
So just treat it a bit like I would the traditional foxgloves.
Yeah, just like foxglove.
Yeah, I think the thing with those is that I like plants that have a second and a third life. And I think that, as John said, you know, if you don't mind the spike, you know, between the flower spikes you get in the autumn, you get cobwebs and the heavy dew on them. And then you get the frost on them if we get a frost in the winter. And then once they start to deteriorate and collapse, I mean, everybody has, I think, their level of untidiness. The other thing to also to bear in mind is that nature is a wonderful thing and will always outdo whatever we try and do. So I would tend to, you know, to leave the spikes on to seed around. You get to know what the seedlings look like and to take out where you don't want and leave where you do. So with my cottage garden hat on, being the president of the Cottage Garden Society, you know, what you tend to find with plants like that is that they'll appear in places you would never think to plant, and that's the great thing about them. And you suddenly see something appearing that you haven't seen the seedling, it suddenly comes up, and maybe not even seen the rosette the first year, and the second year it starts to flower, and you think, oh, I'd never put that there, but doesn't it look fantastic? And it's a nice surprise. The other thing as well, in order to get them to be more perennial in the fact that you get the flowers every year, why don't you think about maybe tapping a few seeds into an envelope, saving them for a year, and then sprinkling those about, or actually sowing them yourself and planting out the little seedlings that you get coming up and then growing them into plants. Plant those out, and then what you'll get is each year you'll get some with foliage on, just foliage, whilst some are flowering. And then the following year, whilst those have seeded down and you get just foliage, the second lot that you've got are flowering. So you've always got flowers coming. It just depends on the space that you have. And obviously when you're storing seed, it needs to be in the dark, but if you put it in an envelope, it's in the dark anyway, but somewhere not next to a radiator, somewhere nice and cool.
Brilliant, thank you.
I have a problem with trying to grow acers. I don't know if you have them here, because I've not been round the gardens yet, but I tried growing them in a pot, and I've had three, and they all just die on me. I know they don't like tap water or drafts, but the leaves just come off and that's the end of them.
Okay, so when you say you grow them in pots, what compost are you using?
Is it ericaceous?
Yeah.
Compost.
Okay.
And the feed as well. I've been using the same type of feed.
Okay. And you buy them nice and healthy in leaf, yes?
Yes.
And you pot them up. And then just talk me through the process. How long before the leaves start to...
It's probably a year or so before they start to just sort of wither.
Right. Okay.
And then within 2 to 3 years, they're dead.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously they're deciduous, so they'll lose their leaves in the autumn, mm-hmm. and then they come back nice and full and whatever, and then they'll...
No, they just don't come back looking anywhere near as good as when I've bought them.
Okay. And when you take them out of the pot, have you taken them out of the pot? When they've died? I'm presuming you...
Well, I do take them out.
And so what's the root run like in the pot?
Not much.
Nothing at all?
No.
Really? So how long has this been going on for? How many years have you done this for now? The last... I'm just trying to think, gauge what the weather's been like whilst you've been doing it.
Well, the last one I took out of its pot was this year, at the beginning, earlier on.
But have you been doing it for 3 years? Or
longer than that, yes.
Longer than that. Okay, so we've had variable summers. Okay. So how often would you say that you water them?
Pretty regularly, but obviously it depends on the time of the year.
Yeah.
As to how much it needs.
Okay.
But regular in the summer, like normally every day.
Okay. So I'm just going to go back to the roots. When you take it out of the pot, do the roots look completely dead and mushy and...
You're just shriveled up and... Yeah.
Yeah. Very often when the foliage goes like that, it is a problem with the root. Now, there are several things that can happen, certainly more so in a ground situation. So there's diseases that attack at ground level that could be a problem, but not really in pots, because invariably when you repot, I'm presuming you change the compost.
Fresh soil.
Yeah, and things, and for the same thing to happen. So it's definitely a root. I mean, my initial thought is that you're overwatering. That's the thing. That's why, you know, it is generally the first question we ask. How often do you, once you've discovered how people are growing it and where they're growing it, the first question is always, how often do you water? Because it's either underwater or overwater. Watering's not easy to get right, but how do you know whether it needs water, or do you just water it when it's hot and dry?
You can see whether the soil's dry or coming away from the edge of the pot. Or...
And is it a peat-free compost, ericaceous compost you're using, or a peat-based?
I don't know.
The thing is that very often with compost, the top can dry whilst the bottom is... still wet, right. So gauging it by the top, I've said it before and I will say it many times and I'll say it again, this is the reason we were born with an index finger, was to be able to test our soil and our compost as to whether it's dry or not, mm-hmm. and so you stick that in, and if it feels moist you don't water it, right. You know, it's very much, you know, the saying killing it with kindness came really from people over watering house plants because they think they need the water and they come from environments where they don't need a massive amount. So a plant does need water, and underwater is by far better than overwater in the fact that if you see it slightly drooping because it's underwater, you give it water in a couple of hours, you would never know it had been drooping. But if it droops from overwater, then the roots can't take up the water because they've rotted.
Right.
So it's by far better to sort of err on the side of not quite so much. The problem with aces is that they, you know, they're a leaf plant. It's what you're growing them for, is their foliage.
Yeah.
So if you do allow them to dry just a fraction too much, then they start to go brown on the edges, which spoils the effect. So it's like I say, it's not an easy thing watering, but you do need to make sure that you're doing it right. And it sounds very much, if it's a continuous thing, that you're probably over-watering.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything that you'd like to add, John?
I was just going to say, what size pot are you growing in, roughly?
About sort of that.
Yeah.
Size.
So, yeah, it should be okay. Obviously, the smaller the pot, the more often you would have to water it. But
I usually buy quite a smallish one because they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I put it into a bigger pot.
But you said you've not had a look around yet, but we do have in the country garden, at the end of the country garden, we have two. Oh, I forget the name now. Benny Shishihenji, that's the variety. Mm-hmm. And it's a pink and a white and a green leaf. All mixed.
Are you going to spell it, John?
No. I might be able to, but I'm not going to. But we've got one each side, and they've been in their pots now for probably 25 years. And I don't do a lot to them. Maybe every 3 or 4 years I'll repot them and just put some fresh compost in. But other than that, they sit quite happily in those pots. And yes, we water them as needed. Another possibility, it's probably not the case, but there is a pest called vine weevil that can eat roots of woody plants in their pots.
Mm.
But you'd probably see signs of the larvae if that was the case. so I don't know.
Maybe risk trying it again.
And also, don't have them in too bright a position.
No, well, I've moved them around the garden because people say they don't like cold winds.
Mm.
But we have a fence all the way round, and there seems to be wind everywhere, especially in the winter time. You can't sort of take it out of the breeze.
I think, well, I mean, in the winter's not a problem because they've got no leaves on them so much. It's when they've got the foliage on them, the wind will scorch the foliage. And I think the biggest problem is in the spring when they start to emerge. If you get cold wind then, it scorches the foliage, the young foliage, which is very tender, as it comes out. And then basically you've got the whole summer with brown-edged leaves because they've been scorched at the beginning in that respect. The thing to bear in mind, you know, we're always trying to recreate the natural environment of a plant when we put it in the garden. And aces are edge of woodland plant, so what they like is semi or dappled shade is their preferred situation, really.
Okay, thank you.
All I was going to add was, when you buy them as a small plant at home, I've bought a couple of little aces like this in recent times because they keep popping up outside the supermarkets and I get charmed
What's
into buying
that,
them.
About like, a it's half litre plant?
No, not even that. They're in like 3 centimetre pot, to be honest, like really little. And so at home, I took it home and put it in a pot, maybe a litre, 2 litre sort of capacity for that season, and let it root to that area. And then the following spring, I've potted it into a bigger pot. So don't just sort of like take a really small little plant and put it in a whacking great big pot, because that would very easily equal like what Nick said, and the roots would easily rot off if they're surrounded by cold, wet, damp compost.
Okay.
And also make sure that your pot's got a hole in the bottom of it so they don't become waterlogged, particularly in the winter.
Yeah.
Nobody likes standing in water.
Yeah, I think one of the things that people don't think of is how much moisture a pot actually does hold, you know, particularly when it's very wet. And we've had 2 very wet, very, very wet winters. And so, as Susie said, the drainage is important in that it does need to drain away, and you're thinking of the worst case scenario all the time. And so it does need to have adequate drainage. Most pots do, to be fair, have a decent sized hole at the bottom. But you do need to make sure it goes away, because obviously even when it's dormant in the winter, if the compost gets too wet in the pot, then it can rot the roots.
Okay.
So there's a reasonable amount to think about. But I mean, they're lovely things, and you know, if you're happy to give it another go,
beautiful.
I think with that, and the answer is always, you know, with watering, I keep saying the sort of theory that I use with that is, if in doubt, if you're not sure whether you need to water, then don't, because invariably you don't need to. And do that, but to sort of test a little bit more and to think about that a little bit more, rather than just doing it as a matter of course.
Okay, thank you.
Have we got any other questions?
I garden on clay soil, and it's really hard and baked at the moment, and I'm struggling finding something to put at the base of my roses on some arches. Everything I've been putting in there is just dying, drying up, just baking in the sun. I've got a south-facing garden and it's just really hot.
So what sort of things have you tried at the bottom of your roses?
Oh, little bits of plants that you see in the garden centres, the flowers. I'm doing the butterfly blue scabias at the moment. They are just gone. They're just dying out. GMs, they are going. I've got dahlias now, but I really need something that's going to cover the ground but have a little bit of height as well, be of good interest.
Okay, John.
My suggestions would be, well, catmint, Nepeta, because that's, well, we're on heavy clay here for a start, so I know what does well in our soil. Nepeta does well, and it's very drought tolerant. A lot of the hardy geraniums would suit. They're quite happy with the dry.
Lavender.
Lavender, silver-leaved plants. But also, I mean, you can have clay soil, but you can have it in good condition. If it's just pure clay, then not many plants thrive in that. But once it's prepared, you know, with some good organic matter dug into it, it's probably the best soil you could have because it holds the moisture well. But yeah, definitely Nepeta or hardy geraniums.
I think the thing to remember is the fact that that the clay soil dries at the surface. I'm sure even now, if we dig down, probably a spit's depth in the ground. Have you been digging on the allotment at all?
Not really, no.
No. Okay. If you go a spit step down, even now in you know, mid-July, having had weeks and weeks of no rain, and our ground being like concrete, that we would find moist soil. And that's the thing with the clay soil is it has that reservoir. Eventually it will go, but I mean, it has that reservoir lower down. But the surface is rock hard. And you know, the thing with roses is that they will root, they will be rooted into the bit that is quite moisture retentive. So, it, you know, the clay soil is ideal for roses because they like it. They love it. What they don't like is a well-drained soil. So realistically, you look at it as a bonus in the best that you've got the best of both worlds, really, in that you can grow plants like Nepeta, like lavender, you know, all of those things that, that John mentioned that are fairly surface rooted. So they love a dry soil. So anything that has a grey leaf, anything that has a hairy leaf, anything that has a glossy leaf, leathery leaf, will be drought tolerant. That's the sort of thing that they grow. What you then have to marry that with is a situation that they like. So don't just look at a plant and think, oh, that's got a glossy leaf, I'll bung that in, to find that it's actually a shade loving plant and not a sun loving plant. So you have to marry the two. The one thing I would say about dahlias is that they do like a bit of moisture retention in the soil, so probably not the most ideal thing to put in there. And the scabious are difficult, I would say, to marry with roses in their sort of soil condition. So, you know, when you look at those sort of things, and the plants that, particularly in the Nepeta that John mentioned, is one that flowers right the way through the summer. And although perennial, so dies right back in that respect, herbaceous, it does tend to, these winters, have a bit of grey foliage left through the winter these days, and we cut them back to that. Obviously, things like lavender are evergreen. Rosemary, you could try in that sort of situation as well.
Yeah, I've got rosemary on another hedge on the opposite side.
Right, yeah.
It's woody at the bottom there.
It's because you need to, as I was saying with lavender, you do need to be regularly pruning them, and pruning them quite hard back. If you listen to the gardening slot on Stamford and Rutland and Stamford Sound, you will have heard me saying that, that they do need to have a regular trim, because otherwise they get leggy and woody at the base otherwise. So both lavender and rosemary need that, and we trim a couple of times a year really in that respect. But if you've already got rosemary that's grown successfully, you know what you have to understand with those sort of plants, that the environment they come from is arid, it's hot and dry. So they root very close to the surface, because when they do get rain, they need to grab it before it all evaporates. So they're not deep-rooted in that respect. So that's why they grow so well on that sort of soil that you have and the same as ours, because it dries so good at the surface. The one caveat that I would put with that is the fact that, you know, what we're now getting is extremes of weather. So we're getting, you know, when it's dry and hot, it's dry and hot for quite a while. We're getting these things, the weather in blocks now. So when you look at the last two summers and the last two winters, you know, we had two very, very, very wet winters, two very, very hot, dry summers. So we're at both ends of the spectrum. And the one thing that these more Mediterranean plants don't like is excessive wet. So I would still advise what John advised with a clay soil, which is to, wherever you can, to dig in organic matter, or even, you know, in the summer, to use it as a mulch to try and conserve a bit of moisture on the surface, and then allow the natural soil organisms to take that into the soil and improve the soil like that.
Brilliant, thank you.
Has anybody else thought of a question that they would like to ask?
I have the opposite effect with spider plants, and I've got some that are growing really, really big. And I did see, I googled about them, that you can cut the roots down. I didn't like to risk it, so I don't know if I can do that to keep them in a smaller plot, because they're getting bigger and bigger. I haven't got much room to keep them. If you can chop the roots down.
When you say spider plant, do you mean like the tender
house plant?
House plant, yeah, indoor.
Okay. Well, I haven't got any here, but I have grown them before. So you want to know if you can
cut the roots down to keep them in, because otherwise they just keep growing bigger and bigger, and now the roots are coming out the top of the soil.
Yeah, well, you either need to repot them or divide them somehow back into smaller plants,
divide
I would say.
It.
Yeah, you'd be able to split okay. them.
Right.
The other thing with spider plants is that they quite prolifically produce offsets.
Mm. Yes.
Which you can actually use in a paper clip, just pin into the top of a small pot and it will root into that pot, a bit like we do with strawberries.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's difficult when you're getting older to think about the fact that as we get older, we become much less prolific. We don't look as good as we did when we were young. And it's the same with plants. And so, you know, we spend quite a lot of time here rejuvenating lots of things. And we talk about it. And I was just talking about that, obviously, with the rosemary and the lavenders, where cutting them back helps to rejuvenate them. And that keeps them going for longer and keeps them flowering and looking much better. And so what I would tend to do would be to have a cycle whereby you are replacing your spider plant with the younger ones, the little
just
babies.
Seems rather cruel because they are growing quite well. They look fine on the top.
Yeah.
Just
but
massive.
Yeah, I think the thing is there comes a capacity that they have. And if you have a little sort of conveyor belt of plants and you know, if you don't need it, give it away. But there is no problem with trimming the roots down in that respect to get them going again. But my view on it would be it's about value for money. At home, I've got some Callan Chloes, which tend to last 3 to 4 years, but they flower through the winter, early spring, and gives me a bit of flower in the house at that time. But I'm aware that they don't last that long, so I've always got some younger plants being propagated and growing on in order to replace. And I think that, you know, if you've had your value from them, and that's fine, but, you know, the young ones will come and replace and do exactly... I mean, that started off as a young plant.
I have got young ones. I've got loads of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, if you've got, like I say, they will trim without any problem.
I'll try
but,
it.
Yeah.
Be brave.
But you've always got that to replace with anyway. Yeah. But I would have that just coming on and doing that because, you know, things have a capacity. But like I say, when they start to get a little bit too congested, it is difficult because you need a balance between the root and the top. The top gets too big and you've got not enough root, it then can't support the top. You know what I mean? In that respect. So that's what the roots are there for. So trim, but not a real... hefty short back and sides.
Okay.
I'll also add that, say for instance, veg plants, we harvest them when they look at their best and their healthiest, and you always think it's a shame to, but it's just the way you have to do it, isn't it? So you sometimes feel that you're being cruel to your plant, but you're actually doing the best for it and for yourself by, as Nick says, raising some newer ones.
I'm struggling a little bit with... I've been gardening since I was quite young, but I do struggle with the garden because I have a very sandy soil. This time of year, I notice around the garden, there's a lot of stuff that is, you know, looking a bit worse for wear. And it's the same, I think, with everybody's garden. I'm just wondering how you cope on a larger scale like this with watering regime. I mean, do you let your plants just go? And just let them survive, or do you keep the watering up, the watering regime up?
Okay, right, I'll start this and then I'm going to get two aspects of it. I'm going to get the ornamental and veg side of it as well, because they differ. I took the decision last year, really, to take a very responsible attitude towards watering. You know, Rutland Water, which is only a mile from here, was at its lowest it's ever been since it was filled at the back end of last summer. And if we hadn't have had such a wet winter, you do wonder how we would have therefore started this year, you know, with the water level obviously low. Now they can pump in from the River Neame, but that costs them money to do that. So, you know, they like it being naturally filled in that respect. So what we decided was that a lot of the plants in the garden would have to look after themselves. I think we mollycoddle a little bit too much. I don't think we really understand how resilient some plants can be.
Yeah.
The one thing you absolutely don't want to be doing is watering your grass, complete waste of water. I know it goes brown and I know it looks ropey, but it's resilient and it bounces back. And that's, we don't want to be wasting water. The most important thing to keep the water, reasons to keep the water for really are to for ourselves and for animals. so our pets and also the animals that we farm in that respect, because they're the most important and we need to keep those going. Plants, if they do decide to go, and we've lost one or two in the garden here through drought, but it gives us, we always look upon things as an opportunity to try something different. Now, obviously, you don't want your whole garden front, and I do feel for you with a very light soil. Yeah. I was just talking earlier on about you know, how our clay soil has a moisture reservoir beneath. It's starting to go now, but we've not had a problem with quite a lot of the plants really through this summer until about now. The more the surface roots are things that struggle. I think that because we're getting these extremes of weather, very wet through the winter, very dry through the summer, we need to look at how we can cope with the soil through the, rather than thinking about just watering, think how we can conserve the moisture that's already in the soil. So certainly for you, adding organic matter.
Yeah, I do add quite a lot of organic matter, but it doesn't last that long. It just tends to go very crispy on the top now.
Yeah.
And you get like that pan on the top, where the water just doesn't get down. I can water for... I've not got a garden on this scale, but I can water for 2 or 3 hours a night every 3 or 4 nights. And you know, I just get a really hard pan on the top, and that water doesn't penetrate into the soil as well.
No.
Even with a organic matter, I put organic matter on, like, say, probably twice a year.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't last.
The thing with a light soil is that you know, you literally are adding every year just to stay in the same situation.
Yeah.
Because it does get, that's the point, a light soil is very open and therefore it gets washed away and taken through. Same with the nutrients.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you ask people what sort of soil they've got, if they've got a clay soil, they generally look at their feet and in a depressive tone say, oh, I've got a clay soil. You know, and I keep saying to them, I'd pick that every day of the week. Now, my mum lives in Kettering in Northamptonshire and she's got grey clay. That's the other end of the scale, really, proper grey clay. But it still will come to it. She's got a bit of topsoil on that before you hit that.
Yeah.
But the thing with the clay soil is that you guarantee that every little piece of organic, every gram of organic matter that you add to that soil has a long-term benefit, whereas you're doing the same thing every year just to stand still.
Yeah.
But it will help. Mulching helps to conserve the moisture. I was just, funnily enough, talking to somebody the other day about the fact that what we don't need is a thunderstorm, because that would do no good, because the surface of the soil is so dry. It needs a wetting up a little bit in order to be able to accept the water that then is then put on it. So otherwise it just runs away. It's a little bit like putting a very dry cloth under a tap. It takes a while for it to start to soak up the water. Yeah. And the soil is the same in that respect. So the approach is only to water when things are absolutely desperate, because once you start,
you
make a rod for your own back.
So what sort of mulch do you recommend then that I should use? Obviously compost, but could you use things like bark?
I personally, I would reach for things like maybe hops in your situation. A lot of breweries are getting, they give them away, free hops. They may need a little bit of time to compost down, but if you just put them on, you know, shallow layer,
yeah,
that might help. Grass clippings as well. I mean, obviously we're not mowing now, but you can also, rather than putting them on your compost heap, where I garden previous to here, I was on a very sandy soil and I feel your pain completely.
Yeah.
in that respect. But and a shallow layer of grass clippings, you know, just help mulching. It helps keep that moisture in. It's very difficult. I mean, yes, I think I agree with Nick that we are lucky that we're on a clay soil here. It saves us a lot during a drought, which we've had, but it also holds the nutrition in the soil, which on a sandy soil, it goes hungry very fast. You're constantly working to stay where you are, kind of thing.
Yeah. We could move house, I suppose.
Yes, you could. But then I think there's a situation of we're never satisfied. We're never quite happy with what we've got. When I first came to work here, I put my spade, having come from this sandy, silt, black cottage garden, light soil, you know, you couldn't roll it into a ball, you could walk across it when it rained, no problem. And I put my spade in the ground here and went, oh, crikey, I'm going to last a week, you know, because it was so heavy. But it is something that I've come to terms with over the years, and I do appreciate, particularly during a dry spell like this.
Yeah.
Going back to your original question, which was how do you manage the watering on a scale like this? So again, the clay does help us when planting out things on the allotment. I water things in and hope then that God will provide me with water. I don't water them constantly when planting things in, because if you're not careful, they don't put the roots down.
Yeah.
You know, so if you mollycoddle them too much, as Nick said, you're making a rod for your own back. So you do have to leave them until it's quite clear that they're starting to show a little bit of signs of stress. In the case of the tomatoes in the greenhouse, I deliberately stress them because it makes them flower.
Yeah.
It gets those early trusses set that much faster, and then we feed and water. They're obviously in pots through the summer anyway. On the allotment, I think the biggest ones that I really pour a lot of water on are the brassicas and also the pumpkins once they're established and growing, and the sweet corn to help that swell. The runner beans need a fair bit of water, else they go very stringy, but I'm watering once a week. I don't want to keep having sprinklers on every day. Basically, I try and water each plot once a week. In the case of the brassicas, going back to those, because of the dry weather, they've been very prone to pests this year. That's the big effect of the drought, is that because they're a bit stressed and they're limping along. The aphid have been a big problem, and the flea beetle have been a big problem.
Yeah.
And the one thing that flea beetle don't like is being constantly shaken off the leaves by a sprinkler. So I quite like to put the water on those quite regularly to keep, A, the plants trying to grow, and B, to keep the flea beetle hopefully off the leaves. I'm not winning very well if you go around the garden. I'm not. But then this year, the mole has gone, oh, well, thanks very much for watering this patch of ground. I'm going to come and look for worms in here now and undermine all of your brassicas,
yeah,
which like being firm in the ground. So I'm having extra problems. By watering, I've caused another problem in that bed. So, yes, it is turning into a tricky year. Yeah, troublesome. The drought has now gone on for such a prolonged period that it is getting, you can help a plant to survive, but we can't make it thrive. That's where it's coming to now, is that, I mean, and I'm going to hand over to John now so he can talk about the bigger things in the garden, because a lot of the plants in the garden are 30 years old, and that we need to keep. Whereas the veg is only there for a season. So sometimes it's a case of, well, we just have to chalk this one down to experience and say, well, okay, that did well, that didn't do well, that was earlier. No, we haven't picked bushels of runner beans this year because we haven't had the water.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just one of those, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, I'll hand over to John.
I was going to say, is your garden relatively old and established or new?
I started off the garden and I love trees.
Yeah.
So I've got quite a few trees on a sandy soil.
Mm.
Which obviously thrive because their roots have gone deep down. But then any planting I put around any of those trees,
yeah,
it just massively struggles.
I mean,
it's constant watering all the time.
Even here, when a lot of the trees and shrubs were young, you would have to water them more until they get a good root system in, of course.
Yeah. I've almost created a dry shade problem for myself,
yeah,
a little bit.
Yes, I could only really suggest lots of mulching, but
yeah,
put a good thick layer on as well,
yeah,
because it reduces the evaporation and just holds more moisture around the roots. And of course, certain plants will tolerate the drought more than others, but I know you've already got your plants in, so you're just trying to keep them alive, of course. Water-wise here, I go around every day really at the moment. And I don't just stick sprinklers on willy-nilly because, you know, you're wasting water on plants that don't need it. But certain plants I have here, whether it be shrubs or perennials, you know, every year in these conditions, plants like Astrantia, they really don't like it. And they sag down and look horrible. And if you let them go too far, you might as well cut them down because they just don't come back again.
Yeah.
Shrubs like hydrangeas, some of the non-evergreen deciduous viburnums, they struggle as well. So there are certain plants that I know do need a bit of extra, and I do just pull round a hose and spot water those, and I give them a fairly good soak. There's no point in going round every day and just giving them a splash, because that evaporates or drains away so fast. So you're better off to give them maybe once a week a good soak, and that will hopefully help better.
Lovely, thank you.
I think, can I just go back to the mulching bit a bit? You know, garden compost, because you know what you're putting on and it's a good mix and adds a good organic matter to it. There are other things to add to what Susie said. I would just point out with what Susie said that if you're going to use spent hops, you need to make sure you've stocked up your beer cabinet because of the smell. It will encourage you to, you know, to crack open one or two. The other thing with the sheep mulching, which is what she was talking about with the grass clippings, I mean, obviously here we've got tons of grass and it's a good way to use that. We use it a lot on things like the potatoes, because if you're earthing up a lot, it gets mixed in. The one benefit, and certainly on the sort of soil that you've got, of doing something like that, is the fact that it needs to be a thin layer. If it's too thick, it goes all slimy and you get the anaerobic breaking down of it, and it goes all slimy and smelly. So a thin layer, which then you can hoe in when you've got your next layer ready to go on, as it were, and put the next layer on, is the fact that grass is very high in nitrogen. So in your soil, which sort of depletes very quickly from nutrients, you are adding nitrogen as well to it. And
Does the breakdown of some mulches, don't they take nitrogen out of the soil?
Yeah, a small amount, not a massive amount, but I mean, the bacteria that break down the material to compost it, basically, do need several things to work, nitrogen being one of them, moisture, air, heat. And so the faster they work, the more heat they generate. So they're sort of almost getting themselves going by generating heat, but you need to give them lots of other things to do in that respect. But obviously there's more permanent mulches. I say permanent in the fact that they break down much slower, like bark, which you can put on, and that would help as well. I think that obviously with canopies of trees, when it rains, it doesn't drop down on the bits you want it to drop down on. Yeah. That's problematic. So I don't know what sort of planting you've got down there, but obviously, you know, there are characteristics of drought tolerant plants that dry shade is the hardest situation to fill. Yeah. And so you've done a good job of making life difficult for yourself.
Yeah.
In that respect, which is probably probably why you may be thinking about moving. And, you know, I mean, to get a better garden, it is the only reason really to move in that respect. Yeah, but I mean, you know, what is gardening? Gardening is a pleasurable battle with nature every day, every hour of every day. Yeah. And when we achieve what we want to achieve, the satisfaction is great. But every year we have a problem or two to deal with, and they're just starting to look like they're becoming a little bit more extreme. Yeah. I read the Met Office report about how the weathers were, and I think, you know, in horticulture certainly, we've been aware of this blocking of the weather, where, you know, we're now all praying for rain. But we know that when it starts to rain, it won't then know when to stop, and we'll get a block of rain, you know, and stuff. But it seems to be, you know, drier summers and wetter winters. They're also talking about, you know, the temperature of the sea, which actually I don't think people realise where the flow starts and finishes. It comes way from down the south of the world and goes up to the Arctic Circle, and that affects us. And they're talking about the fact that, you know, with glaciers melting and the Arctic Circle melting, and the lighter water evaporates quicker and it changes the way the weather is. And what they're talking about is the potential actually for getting greater extremes, so more heat, but also more cold. So we haven't had cold winters for a while, but they're talking about the possibility, and don't quote me on this, because some scientists think that's the case and others disagree, as you always get. But it's just out there, and they're talking about the possibility of us also. So if we're getting wet winters that are also very cold, then that's quite problematic with the plants that like it dry and hot.
Yeah.
So gardening will become more of a challenge, but we're up for a challenge, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I'm sort of going over to the stage of thinning out trees now to let light through, to let the water come through when it does rain.
Yeah.
And also putting more drought tolerant stuff in.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, research is, I mean, we all impulse buy. We all go to a nursery or a garden centre and say, oh, I like that. Yeah. You pick it up, you buy it before you've even read the label as to what it does. You get home and you think, oh, where am I going to put this? Yeah. But research is important, making sure you're getting the right plants, finding, you know, the characteristics of plants that will therefore cope with your situation. Yeah. And obviously, you know, thinning out a canopy to give you more of a semi or dappled shade would help massively, like you say, with the rain penetration as well as the light level, which will open up the palette of plants that you can grow in there.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for that. That kept us all on our toes, and I hope we've helped.